Another year has come and gone. Are you wondering what the future holds? Are you struggling with the decision about love, money, your career, your family? StarPsychics.com, that stars with a Z, has the answers you desire. StarPsychics.com is the best and brightest advisor site on the internet, staffed by top-rated, professional, fully tested, and certified advisors. This is the real deal. At StarPsychics.com, you create your own personal account, and you pick your advisor by reading their extensive bios. Then you decide on a budget that you are comfortable with. Your pathway to a clearer and brighter future is just a few clicks away. No gimmicks, no bait and switch. StarPsychics.com has daily blogs and lots of links to help you develop your own intuition. Log on now. That's StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. And here's the best part. They're available 24/7. StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. You must be 18 years or older. Your future awaits.
Hello, everybody. This is Natalie, also known as StarsCast, and my guest just called in. But I want to start off by telling everybody we have some exciting news. First of all, my newsletter is going to be a flip newsletter. In other words, you'll be able to turn the pages. That's, for the site. You can go on starpsychics.com, stars with a Z. You can click on the right sidebar there. It's got a picture of the newsletter. Click on that. You can sign up and get that issue. All the issues will come to you. And the next exciting news, and this is the big one for me, is because it was my dark horse since it began about 24 years ago, is having the magazine be converted to a flip magazine. In other words, you'll see the front cover, then you'll be able to click on a place, and it'll turn the page for you. Then it'll turn another page. It's really exciting, and the only reason it's come to fruition for me, I mean, I've always had the desire to do it. It's just that I had somebody come along, and she's been working with me for a while, with all this enthusiasm. She says, "Oh, my God, you can do this." I said, "Well, yeah, of course. Of course I can. But, you know, you don't ever do anything by yourself. You can't. I mean, I've had all my sites since 1998, 1999. And I'm going to tell you, it's a big job. And so you have to have people behind you doing the creativity. And then I have another gal who does a lot of banners. She just created one for my guests today and myself, threw it everywhere because it's unique. It's a little video. And we've been promoting this gentleman anyways. But I'm going to bring him on right now because I'm so excited. I can't even begin to tell everybody. Oh, I'll tell you how excited I am. Anyways, welcome, Steve Alton. How are you?
Good, Natalie.
Good.
How are you?
Oh, I'm great. You know, I didn't know if we were going to have the show today because of the weather. I mean, it's a little squirrely here, but, I mean, it's raining and windy. And where are you? Are you in the south?
We are in South Florida, so the storm is above us right now.
Oh, thank goodness.
It's like several hundred miles north of more.
Oh, good.
More.
Well, it's coming my way. I'm kind of, you know, where Savannah is. Well, there's a little, what I call a little curve in the United States along the coast there. It's like a little niche. That's where my city is. It's called Bluffton.
Are you in Georgia?
No, I'm in South Carolina, but I'm only 12 minutes from Savannah. So whatever weather they get, it kind of blows my way. Sometimes, not really too bad, so I've been lucky. So everything is going good. But anyways, I want to get started with you. First of all, you are my most famous guest I've ever had, and I'm so excited about it. Not
well, that
just
lowered
because
the bar a bit.
Pardon me?
That lowered the bar a bit.
Yeah. No, you are. Yeah. I mean, I don't try to get anybody. I probably could. I let them come to me. I figure it's divine order. If it's going to happen, the door is going to open, and here you are. Anyways, you know, Steve is the author of the books, The Meg, and The Meg, The Trench, and other books, lots of books. You've done a lot of books. But the two famous ones right now, because they're two movies, is the last one that came out on August 4th was The Meg Trench 2. Is that what it's called, or is it called just called The Trench?
It's called Meg 2, The Trench.
Okay. And I see it on my screen right now. Anyways, I want to go back a little bit because everybody says, oh, he's got all this going. It wasn't always wonderful for you. I like to let people know that it doesn't matter what you do, how successful you are. You started someplace, and for you, it was a little rough. You had health issues, I know. And people will say, oh, Natalie, you know, he's a success or she's a success. But I like to go back to the beginning. Now, tell us just a quick rundown. How did you get started into writing? I know you went to school. You got your master's degree in sports medicine. You did that. You got a doctorate of education at Temple University. Okay, but how did you get started writing a book? And I interrupt with that. I want to say, now, when you write a book and you sell the rights to a studio, I guess, I don't even know if this is the way it goes, you don't do the screenplay. Do they have somebody that takes your information and puts it on the screen, writes it to go on the screen? Is that how it works? Tell us how that works. I don't even know. Did I lose you? Steve, I lost you. Hello? Did I lose you? I bet I lost you. Hold on. Okay, can you hear me now? Steve? Hello? Hello, I'm back. Steve? There you are. My mute button is doing something, and I couldn't hear you at all. I'm sorry.
What happened? You got hit by lightning?
I don't know. Oh. Oh, okay, all right, well, let me try this.
I have
It would work, except that I have to connect to my radio show, and I can't do it through my cell phone. I have to, because I have to have two numbers going. So let's try, call in again, and let me see if I can do this again. I'm going to try this dumb phone. You can call in on any phone you want. I'll know it's you, right? Okay, well, what's your other number? What's your, still 561?
Yes.
Okay.
309.
Okay, all right. Call on that one. I'll watch for you.
Okay.
All right, bye. Well, I don't know if I'm live on the air or not because my mute button is giving me problems and it got connected and I don't know. So hold on. Let's see. It started off so great. But he got hit by lightning, so. So we're going to wait. Oh, there he is. Okay, hold on. Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, it's perfect. Okay, I'm sorry about that, everybody. He got hit by lightning. My mute button did something. I wonder if that's a sign. I don't know. Anyways, I started asking you about how and why you started writing. What happened in your life?
Well, I've always enjoyed writing because I was a big reader in school. But the opportunity to Wright came along when I was 35, and I'd grown up, you know, watching Jaws and watching great white shark specials and movies and things. Anyway, I got a Time magazine when I was 35 years old, raising a family of five, that had an angler fish on the front cover, which is a deep water fish. And the article talked about trenches, how unexplored they are. I talked about hydrothermal vents and life is existing basically off chemicals instead of sun. I found it fascinating, but also when they talked about the Mariana Trench being so unexplored, I thought, I wonder if that might make a really good book if somebody could write that, combining, you know, that megalodons continue to exist, but only in the deep. And, you know, perhaps because of our own intervention, one of them escapes and causes havoc. And I decided I was going to write the book. So I never written anything like that before, but I organized my beat sheet and did a lot of research. There's not a lot out there on megalodon, but there's great white sharks, so you can sort of use that as an example. And 6 months later, had a manuscript, which I sent out to. I got a book on how to get published, you know, like publishing for dummies. And basically it said that you need an agent. You need representation or you're never going to get anywhere. So I tried to find an agent, sent out about 62-page query letters talking about my story. Heard back from about 20 of them who weren't interested. The rest just never even bothered to reply. But one guy was interested, and he did reply. His name is Ken Atchity, and he would go on to become my first literary agent and manager. And Ken said that, you know, the book is great, but in order to get real greatness out of it, you got to treat it like a fish. You cut off its head, you cut off its tail, and you start with the meat in the middle. And you're all over the place. So, you know, we worked together, and I paid him a substantial fee, but I sold a car that I had owned since I was 17 that my dad bought me. An old Chevy Malibu convertible, and paid for the editing fees. And Ken's plan was to get it marketed first to it. He had a partner, a TV producer, and the movie producer. And, you know, they wanted to get Meg option as a movie before they took it out. So that's what we did, basically.
Wow, but look at the success you had. Now, I started to ask you before we kind of went all crazy with the phones. So you wrote the book. Does somebody take that story that you wrote and develop it for the big screen? How does that work? Because I'm sure they didn't do word for word what you wrote. But how does that happen? How, for the people out there who are aspiring to see their book on big screen, I mean, is it a screenplay? Is that what they do? How does it go from a book to becoming a movie?
Well, first they have to option it. If you're the author, they have to option it from you. Which the studio that optioned it on a first book deal was Hollywood Pictures, which is owned by Disney. So the next day I was sent an email of the Hollywood Reporter, and on the top story was new author makes deal with Disney for giant shark movie, or something to that effect. So we sort of did it much differently. It was a very intelligent way to do it. We hit the movie deal lined up, and then we took that out to, and the rest of the manuscript, which I finished in September, to the six biggest publishing houses in the country. And buoyed by the fact that we had a first book deal at Disney, they proceeded to bid each other, outbid each other. And the final bid was a two book deal for $2.1 million. Still my
that was to the rights. That's point. The rights to your story, right? To your book.
The publisher owns it.
Okay.
They own the rights. They did at the time. And you know, my family and I were, you know, eating paycheck to paycheck and having a tough time with it. But that filled our coffers for a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, we moved out of our rental place. We purchased an acre lot and had a home built. And yeah, things are looking really good. But my career has been an absolute roller coaster. And I hate roller coasters. I hate them.
But, so do I.
What happened from that point is that we had the movie deal going. We had the book deal going. Meg was named the book of the 1996 Frankfurt Book Fair in Germany, sold to 20 other countries. And the host country and the host book dealer was Bertelsmann. Bertelsmann was a German company, and they were pretty strict about things. And they saw, I mean, I was not there. You know, this is up to Doubleday, too. So they have owned the rights, so they want to make money back to sell the foreign rights. Well, they not only made it back, they paid off the whole thing just from the foreign rights. But Bertelsmann was kind of ticked off at them because they felt that this was not literacy, like a snooty person might say. You know, God forbid it. We had a huge following of teenagers who loved the book, absolutely loved it. And there were reluctant readers, too. And also there were people who had dyslexia. And they hated to read, but they loved reading Meg. And it took us like 10 years
to because they read
how.
From they read backwards, don't they? They don't read like you and I, the first word, and that they read a different way. I think they see it a different way. I'm not going to say they read backwards, but they don't read like we do. You're right. But
well,
they loved it,
was,
maybe because it was easy reading, maybe, Steve. You know,
it was
exciting.
It was definitely exciting, but it wasn't easy reading. It was written for an adult. But what happened was that the teachers wanted to know why are they getting such an exuberant response from this one book. But it turned out to be all my books got the same response. And then they actually brought my shark book in again and compared it to other shark stories that were out there. And the other ones didn't get past the first couple pages. But mine, the students read the whole thing. So what was it? What was the secret? Well, it turns out that I write very visually. And visual writing attracts people who hate reading and people who see things through eyes that aren't quite ready to handle it.
Right.
And so that's where we were. And I started working on my second book And 6 months later, Meg came out and hit the bestseller list. And 3 months after that, they fired me. They terminated my contract. Oh, I'm glad you felt that was funny.
Oh, goody.
laugh at death notices and stuff? I'm just kidding.
Gosh.
That's funny? What? That's not funny. We just moved into a brand new home, our dream home.
No, it's not funny. I was being facetious, but yeah, no, you're right. You have things going, and then all of a sudden the carpet is pulled out from under you.
It's not just the fact that it was pulled out from under me, it's the way it was pulled out. My second book was supposed to be my agent Ken Ashley on my second book deal, which was about the Mayan calendar's 2,000-year-old doomsday prophecy that predicts humanity will end in the year 2012. And the only person who could stop it is the son of a famous archaeologist. And he's locked up in an insane asylum talking about the end of the world.
Oh, okay. It was very rocky. So what happened after that? I mean, here you have your new home. You're riding kind of okay. You're thinking things are going good. How did you recover from that?
Well, I had no idea what was going on, but Bertelsmann, that company who did not like my book, or me probably, although I never met anyone, in Germany during the Frankfurt Book Fair, they decided that they were going to buy Bantam Doubleday on the QT, on the down low. So the president of the company, Arlene Friedman, arranged for us to have a meeting at lunch in South Florida. So she flew down from New York, and he said, Steve, I have great news for you. you're going to be our next Peter Benchley. Now, Benchley, who's the author of Jaws.
Okay, yeah.
I've written books. My first response, and, you know, I loved his book. It influenced me in a tremendous way. So I said to Arlene, why do we need a new Peter Benchley? What's wrong with the old one? And she alluded to some kind of drinking problem and was not very concerned to do. But she said, you're going to rewrite that Mayan story and make it an underwater story. And all of your books for us are going to be underwater stories. And I thought, what the hell fun is that? I mean, I want to be regulated to where I can write a book as far as the backstory underwater. And so, but a lot of money was at stake, you know, over $1 million. So I did what they told me. And she actually had my literary or my editor, my senior editor at the Tumblr, was working with me. And she told him that, you know, I don't care what you do, make it an underwater story. So this guy started writing and turning in chapters on my book. I mean, I'm a newbie. I'm a rookie. But how the hell can I write another book if you're writing chapters that I don't even know what you're writing about?
Right.
It was a cluster F. But they paid me on the first money due, and they paid me on the second installment. And that was not small money.
Okay.
So you know, what is going on here? I mean, if they accept the two of them, then they must plan to accept the third. Well, a week before I was supposed to get the third payment of $800,000, they stopped talking to us. Without any rhyme or reason. And it turns out that Bertelsmann bought them up. And in an effort to save her job, Arlene Freedman fired me or canceled our contract. But that was a tough situation that she put herself in, because Meg, which is in every bookselling list, was due out in paperback that summer. So Bertelsmann didn't want it coming out. Arlene Freeman's trying to save her job. She didn't want it coming out, and she didn't want to make it look like they had fired me because they just didn't know what to do with me. So they went on the attack. It wasn't enough that they fired me. Now they had to make me look really bad. And, you know, when you've got people like Time Magazine, you know, doing your bidding, they can do stuff like that. But I had to get back in the game, so I immediately told my agent. You know, first my agent said, he got together with my attorney and said, you know, we're going to sue because this is bullshit. And,
right.
And then they made me look bad. And they're the ones who look bad. They're trying to save their jobs from Bertelsmann. So I went on and started. The Mayan calendar story was showed a lot of promise, but it really wasn't a very good book because I'm serving two masters here. I'm serving my publisher who wants to write a totally different underwater story. So, no, it wasn't very good. He probably saved my career by not publishing it. But what happened was we had to get the rights back to that book, because if anything I wrote on the same subject, they would just use it to pay off what they had advanced me on.
That's right.
I wasn't about to start writing a year or two project so they can get rewarded. So we sued them. We met in we went to arbitration, and, you know, I basically said to my senior editor, look, you know, Scott, you know, I'm not trying to make waves here. This is my first book as an author, and I'm already hit the top and hit the bottom at the same time.
To me, right? I know what you're saying. It probably really angered you.
Well, I wasn't about to write that story. I mean, it was a horrible story. But I did work. But I had done a lot of research on the one that I wrote, and I went down to Chichen Itza in the Yucatan Peninsula, where the Mayans are from, and, you know, climbed the pyramid, the Kukulkan Pyramid, and saw the shadow and, you know, I did a lot of work in this. So they said, okay, what do you need from us? They said, you know, you need this much just to soothe me over and give me the rights back to my book, and I will go away. And that's what happened. And the second book that was published, which is the third book I wrote, was The Trench.
Okay. So, but Disney ended up making the Meg into a movie, right? Is that that's correct, right?
Say that again.
I said Disney is the one that made the movie the Meg. No. Okay.
No. Disney was having their own problems. It was Hollywood Pictures, a different owned by Disney, and the studio head was in a fight with the person who had optioned him Meg, and he was he would go on to the studio was Warner Brothers the studio was Hollywood Pictures from Disney, but they were in a battle with Warner Brothers to try to, you know, each one, I guess they just didn't like each other. So when we optioned the book to Disney, the person who had optioned it went to Warner Brothers and accepted a job there as their head of studio. And the first thing he did was he pulled off of a bookshelf the script to Deep Blue Sea, which had been...
Oh, yeah, that's a good movie. I watch that all the time.
Which,
yeah.
had not been greenlit. So this guy, first thing he does, if you get back at the studio head at Disney, is he greenlights Deep Blue Sea. But the problem was is that we didn't have an acceptable script. So he got way ahead of David Vogler, who was a studio head, and it cost Vogler his job. And so 2 years after I signed a contract with Disney, that was canceled. So between Double Days canceling my second book and Hollywood Pictures putting, my movie into the toilet, I lost more money than I made.
Oh.
But life goes on. You get back up on the horses. It's not about how many times you fall; it's how many times you get up.
Right.
And what happened was, I did go back and write the Mayan book. I was fresh then. I'd taken a year off from it. And I made it exactly what I wanted to make it. And it did really well. It got it did okay sales-wise in the U.S. It didn't get a good PR push. But overseas, my foreign agent took it out and sold it to a small publishing house in Spain. And they ran with it to the point where, it was called Domain, but they retitled it to be I remember this year.
It's flashing in front of me, the book Domain that you did. I see that. I'm on your website. That's all I know. Wow.
El Testamento Maya, which means the Mayan Testament in Spanish. And the Mayan Testament turned out to be the number one book in Spain, the number one book in Mexico, and the number one book in different countries in South America. And that's the one that Doubleday canceled. So... serve them right, huh?
I mean, you don't realize it until you talk to somebody how messy. I mean, when I see something, okay, it should go like this way, but it doesn't. It goes sideways. It goes upside down. It's not, like you said, it's not an easy walk in the park where you can have something published, where you can have something made into a movie. I mean, it just seems like everybody's got their hands out. But you had a rough road. Oh, my gosh.
But I also had a very good road, too. So I wouldn't exchange it for anything. Well, that's not true. When we were in the final hours of bidding for Meg and the second book, which I wrote up like a one-page treatment to, it was Doubleday was not the highest bid on the table. There was another publisher who was higher. And the reason we went with Doubleday was because they had done Jaws.
Yeah.
Right. But based upon what they did, they didn't learn many lessons from it because, I mean, you know what the cover of Jaws looks like, right?
Yes, absolutely.
You have a scary-looking shark rising above to a woman swimming naked on the ship.
Grabbing somebody. Yeah, an attempt to grab a girl. Yeah. Yeah,
well,
right.
His intentions are lined up with... Well, instead of putting a shark on the cover, Doubleday put a trickle of blood along the surface. What the hell is that?
I mean, that's not even appealing.
No, it wasn't. I mean, it was appealing, but it's really not a shark book. Plus, the name Meg doesn't tell you it's a sharp book. It tells you maybe it's the character on Family Guy. I don't know.
You're right. That those two words, the Meg, nobody would know if they didn't see an image. Period.
And then for the,
I mean,
then for the
you
paperback,
know.
For the paperback under Bertelsmann, they decided they were going to design a cover that nobody would buy. That was their goal. They wanted no sales under Steve Alton. And so they printed, 700,000 copies of a paperback that is black. And on the side, in black writing, it says, Meg. That was it. Nobody knew what the book was about.
And who's going to buy it? And, you know, it's really funny. I'm going to tell you something, Steve. The cover of a book, I mean, and I get them sent to me all the time, is very important. And I like the feel of the book. Isn't that weird? If the cover attracts me right away, with just whatever my eyes say, oh, I like this, then I'm going to read it. And it's got to feel good. People will send me PDFs, and I'll say, it's not going to do me any good. I can't do a review. I have to have the book because I like to have it in front of me. So
sure.
You're right. If you don't have the right cover, I mean, like I'm looking at the cover that because I don't have the book, The Meg, but I'm looking at it on your site. And now the second one that you did for that seems to be a little bit better of a cover to me. I guess because the jaws are open, right?
What's the title? I'm just pulling on my statement.
This one is Meg Revised and Explained. That was the second. I think that was the second one you have here. I mean, they're flipping by so fast because I don't have the books, but it doesn't matter. Then you have Meg the Primal Waters, and then you have Meg Hell's Aquarium.
Right. All
and then you have Goliath. Well, that's
all those covers
there. And there, here's the Meg with the like you're looking underneath the shark, and it's got something flying from it. I don't even like that cover. That's the movie poster. I like the one that was Revised and Explained, where it's actually like the movie where the Meg is trying to grab somebody on a surfboard. You know, it's kind of like coming out of the – I love that cover. Your covers are very appealing. You've written a lot of books. Okay, now, I want to go to this. When you knew that the movie The Meg was going to get done, now, this was done by Warner Brothers?
Not at first. What had happened was, I got to go back for a second. After Hollywood Pictures passed on it, or we put it in a revision, it's called reversion. I got the book rights back. The dramatic rights back. And so I happened to be. I have a friend who I met through the business, Nick Nunziata, who was the former creator at Shudder.com, Cinematic Happenings Under Development. When all this movie stuff was taken off over, you know, websites and things like that, he was on top of the crest. And so he knew a lot of people he just met, and he knew he was a big fan of my stuff, so we talked a lot. But he also was friends with the Hellboy guys, Guillermo del Toro, the director, and producer Lloyd Levin and Larry Gordon.
Oh, Hellboy, so, yes. Okay.
And so Nick took Meg, he sent Meg to Lloyd and Guillermo and said, we got to make this movie. So they loved it, and they called us out to California, and I flew out there and into L.A. and my manager, who's based in L.A., and we met with Guillermo and Lloyd and Nick. And basically, I had written a screenplay that they liked, but Guillermo wanted some changes. And so he gave me a list of changes, and I went back to the hotel and worked all night. And the next day, we met again, and they had all the changes. So the goal was that they were going to sell a package to a studio, a package being a script, maybe an actor, producers.
Okay.
And Guillermo, Lloyd, and Nick were the producers, and Larry Gordon, who was bit of a butthead, old school, you know, men kind of thing.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
they took that package, they added as a director Jan de Bont. And Jan had just done Twister.
Oh, another movie I love.
He was, gosh, he's a really good guy and a good director. So we took that package. Jan and I went to work on the script a little, tuned it up a little bit. And then they took the package to New Line Cinema, who had a first look deal. So New Line optioned it, but they gave it 90 days to close. And that's when I saw, you know, where greed runs amok, because they would not, Larry Gordon, who would never show up on site, never show up for any of the meetings, he wanted 4 points on the back end. 4 points is like 4 percentage points of the gross and of the net profit. So nobody would sign the deal because New Line didn't want any of this. And we've already got like 10 producers attached, some on their side, some on our side. And
are you there? Or did you drop? No, you didn't drop. Oh, yep, you dropped. Okay. He'll call back, never fear. But isn't this exciting? For those of you who are listening, the trials and tribulations of writing a book, people fighting over everything, we don't know that. We don't see that. All we see is, oh, here's the book, here's the movie. It's a success. But we don't know what goes on. That's why I'm asking Steve all of these questions, because I want to know the whys and the wherefores is what I call it. Anyways, I hope he calls back. We've had, you know, see, he's in Florida. I'm in South Carolina. The weather's been kind of dicey. And I was almost going to change the show to another day, and then I thought, no, you know, the movie just came out on the 4th, The Trench. Oh, here he is. Okay. There,
what happened that time? That wasn't the weather. I think it just hung up on me.
Yeah, there you are. Okay, I was just telling everybody that we don't know the trials and the tribulations that go behind getting things to where you want to see them, like a book, and then a movie. You think it's, oh, great, here's the movie. It was easy. No, it's not easy. I didn't realize from what you're telling me that people fight over things and they try to cheat and it's kind of sad. So anyways, go back. So I want to know who ended up making the movie The Meg. Who, what company? Who was it?
Well, you got to let me finish the midline first.
Okay. I love hearing this.
So we had a 90-day, we had a cutoff to sign the contract. And Larry Gordon refused to sign anything until he got his money. You know, not that he would earn it, but he wanted it. And so they argued up to the last day, and then just as everyone agreed, Jan de Bont wanted to be a producer. And he said he was going to sign it unless he was producer and director, because he was doing all the work. And he actually did a lot of work, but I didn't like any of it, but he did it. He created a megalodon model that looked like a bonefish, and so it was horrible. Anyway, with 15 minutes till midnight, everybody finally agreed, and they signed a contract. And so the first move that the studio did, which the studio is New Line Cinema, is they hired a new screenwriter, because for some strange reason, the author has no ability to write his own story for in Hollywood, which I definitely am not agreeing with that. But Shane was a little bit different, and he certainly had a full resume, so, you know, he's a proven screenwriter. So, you know, I said, okay, whatever you need, just ask me, and I'll get you whatever you need. And he used to call me up, you know, he's 3 hours over earlier in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
He'd call me up. He didn't care when he called me, Christmas Eve. He'd call me, you know, whatever it might be. And he'd say, can you send me any passages you have of that describe the maid doing X, Y, Z? So I'd, you know, cut and paste them and email them over. And I thought, well, this is really good because it's a good sign because he's obviously interested in the source material. So he writes the script, the first draft, and Nick sends it to me at like 2 in the morning. And I read the thing and I was like, holy crap. What a piece of garbage this is. I mean, he basically, he never used anything from my book. He made an entirely different story up that dealt with whales. And there was a whaler who's from Japan, and somehow he's whaling over the coast of California as if there are no whales over the 10,000 miles he just came. And somehow the sun dies. And so he's like Ahab now because of the megalodon. I was so pissed off. I'm like,
I can imagine.
I called Nick. I said, Nick, you better call me down because I'm on the roof. I'm about to kill myself. You know, because you're just fine with it. But that's how I felt. So New Line did not accept his script either because they were on a totally different page than him. They only wanted a budget for $70 million to create what the head of the studio said was a more expensive open water. You know, open water was the true story of a husband and wife who are not, they go scuba diving and
right, and they're stranded. Yeah, I saw that movie. I saw it.
Yeah.
I watch all of them.
But that's not what Meg's about.
No.
So then things got really wacky. And the producers on my side, half of them are not talking to each other because they're pissed off. Lloyd Levin, the producer, the lead producer, who's doing a big bunch of work, Shane Salerno doesn't give his script to Lloyd. He gives it to New Line. So right away that caused problems. So I'm sitting in the middle of these two parties because I'm the only one they'll talk to. But I don't have time for this. I mean, this is not my arena. I mean, I'm the author, and I was told to go away. So they brought in, New Line brought in a gentleman who I heard about who's really well-regarded. And he's a problem solver. So they brought him in on top of this. And he said to me, Steve, I need to ask you a favor. Our option runs out in 2 days. Can you give us an extension so that we can get a rewrite from Shane? And I said, you know what? Richard Brenner is his name. I said, Richard, that's what you want. You got it. So we got a new script back. It sucked worse than the first one, and the writers referred it back to me. Now, one of the reasons, there's a lot more to the story because the foreign rights negotiator for New Line pre-sold the rights to Meg at a discount, which he was not authorized to do, but New Line's last 10 pictures had tanked. So everybody wanted Meg, you know, a much more exciting subject, but he gave them to get back in good with them. But by doing that, he lost the ability to finance the budget, and that's a big no-no. And so the picture was reverted back anyway. They couldn't get co-financing. But I brought somebody in at that point. I had brought somebody in who I just met through a friend who was a producer whose forte was raising private funds to do movies. So she actually was in charge of a German, not a banker, but a private investor who funded a lot of billion-dollar pictures in Hollywood. So she was all excited to be involved. And she flew off from Virginia to New York to fly over to Germany to pitch the deal. When Shane told me on the phone, they can't co-finance this deal because they undersold the rights. And so I called this woman, Belle Avery, who had just arrived at the airport in New York to take a flight over to Germany. I said, Bill, don't get on a plane. They freaking lied to us. And so that ended that relationship with New Line. But then, you know, I got the rights back now, and I had just been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. And there's, I have no doubt the stress associated with dealing with these guys, you know, I'm sure added fuel to the fire. But she, I said, Bell, please take the profit. And she, and I gave her a dollar and paid for the project. She paid me for the project. Later, she raised some funds for me to give me a bigger advance. She'd already optioned the lock for me, which is the another popular thriller of mine. Deals with the Loch Ness Monster, the real Loch Ness Monster, not that silly dragon or whatever it is. And so she optioned that one. So now she had two of my tenfold productions, tenfold being, you know, the big ones. And so she said, we have to go out there with a new script. So we co-wrote a script together that is still the best script that I've read about Meg. And she took that script to 25 readers, professional readers in Hollywood. And she said, and she took all the names off of everything. And she said, which script is better? And 25 to zero, they picked our script. And the people were enthusiastic. We want to see this movie. When is it going to make it? So that started about on an eight-year trip to raise funds around the world. She paid for her own trip, sold a few homes, sold paintings that she'd collected, and she busted her butt out there, and she believed in the Chinese as far as the future of funding movies. And so her work paid off when she met the director, the owner, the CEO of Gravity Pictures. Gravity is a Chinese company that makes movies. And so that formed a partnership between her company and their company. And then she went to get distribution, and so she went to Warner Brothers. Now, remember where Warner Brothers came in earlier in the story?
Right, I remember, yeah.
Warner Brothers was the guy who negotiated a deal with us for Disney, became an enemy of Disney's studio head, and now it was Warner Brothers that ended up with Meg. Go figure.
So it kind of did. It ended back where it began, actually, almost, right? So
not
Warner
quite,
Brothers did the movie.
Warner Brothers did distribution on the movie, and they're part of a partnership, a U.S.-China partnership co-production deal. And they turned out to be the biggest co-production in the history of Chinese and American co-production.
See, this is fascinating because, like I said, you know, I'm like this person. You know, you see a movie and you don't really realize the ins and outs to get there, and how they try to rake you over the coals and how they really want to take it all from you.
Well, there's another little bridge to that story if you'd like to hear it.
Sure. I've got to set up for 2 hours. I mean, I'm listening to you, and I've got all these questions, but I'd love to hear the background because I don't think people know this. So I'm not in my circles. They don't, you know, really what it's rough. It's tough.
Well, before I I'll tell you this little important story, I'll tell you that all of your listeners right now have a great opportunity to get the entire Meg collection, which has never been done before. Meg Legacy, it's called.
It's on your site. I know. We have it. Yeah, we have an ad going out with it. Yes, absolutely.
Well, that's going to be the biggest collector's item in the Meg venue because we're only allowed to print 5,000 copies. And these are not normal copies. These are leathered bound or faux leather bound, not real leather, but the fake good stuff that you don't have to kill an animal for. So they're bound, hardback, twice the size of regular hardback as far as the page count. And because every book has one of the seven novels and parts of the four novellas or the Meg Origins, which is the prequel, and it also has six of the six of the graphic comics, one each volume for the first six. But then it has one other thing, and that is my story, which I've been telling you this phone call.
Yeah.
My readers pushed me to tell me the stuff, and I said, okay, you know what? Guys, I'm going to buy these books, and I'm going to give you what you want. So I'm writing my biography and putting a little bit in each one of the books. But if you go to meglegacy.com, M-E-G-L-E-G-A-C-Y, you can buy one of the 5,000 before they sell it. And they were going pretty fast. It was about 4 hours
ago. I bet they will. I bet they will. Now, I have a question. Now, the first movie, did you have any say-so in who would be in it?
My contact in the deal was Bell. You know, we're friends. She's my producer. I optioned everything to her. And she's working with other projects of mine, too. So as long as Bell was a Meghead, and the Meghead is the most devoted Meg fan there is. They always, you know, they believe in the novel. They want to see the movie. They want to see the best because they just love giant sharks. Y'all and Meghead, too. And the reason this is important is because when Meg first came out in hardback and then it came out in paperback, it developed a relationship with teens because, you know, about a month after the book came out, in paperback, I started getting inundated with email from teens who were all telling me the same thing. I hate to read, but I love Meg. Finished the book before, but Meg, I finished. And then the teacher started emailing me and said, you're not going to believe this going on in my classroom. My most reluctant readers are reading two chapters ahead of the group. And then the Young Adult Library Services Association, they make as the number one book for reluctant readers. So now, my background is in education. I have a Bachelor's of Art, Bachelor's of Science in Physical Education, Sports Medicine Master's, and a doctorate degree from Temple University, mostly because I just wanted to be a coach and open up, you know, opportunities for me as a grad assistant, but... anyway, when I started getting inundated with the emails, they weren't just coming in trickling. They were coming in 100 a day. You know, it sort of knocked both of us out. And so I created a nonprofit program called Adopt an Author.
I saw that, yes. Yes.
This was back in 1999. And a bunch of volunteers and I, and some teachers who were using it as classrooms, we developed curriculum to let the teachers who want to start using one of my books in their classes, they don't have to create their own stuff. They can just do what we have on file, take what they want. And in addition to that, they also have, the students have the opportunity to email me, and then I'll get back an email just like everyone else does. And then when they finish the unit, we set up a, not with everybody, but the opportunity was there again. We set up a conference call into their classroom on speakerphone, and so they would do a live Q&A with me. Now, this program is, now we started out with maybe a dozen teachers in the Adopt an Author program, and our peak we were at 10,000 teachers.
Wow.
Now, I say all this because critics of Meg, who came out, you know, 6 months before it was even in the first movie in theaters, they were already panning it. They were already saying, this is crap. It's, you know, give it a bad review. They had never seen the movie. How do you give it a bad review? But I knew we were going to kick ass because I had this small army that was getting bigger. And it was over two generations now. So you can imagine you know, you're a reluctant reader. You read Meg in school. And now, 20 years later, or 15 years later, you're reading your book to your son or daughter. And then
that's right.
15 years later, you're reading it to your grandson. So Meg has been around for two generations. And that's why Meg Legacy is so important, because it'll be the only way you get to read all the books.
Well, you see, but you're like giving, you giving back to what you've received. You see, that's the beauty of it all. You're not one of these, you know, guys that, oh, I'll make all this money and I'll run with it. I don't need to help anybody. I don't need to do anything. But you see, that's not your style. And I happen to believe that when you do things like that, something great is going to come back to you. Sometimes it's not right away. They're not, and you know, it's not right away. Sometimes you have to work really hard. I mean, like for me, my first site, I mean, my magazine is almost 25 years old, and it's, I always called it my dark horse because I knew it would come from behind. I knew, because, you know, I'm in the psychic business also, but that's not where you do anything good. You know, I have, you know, like in this magazine, so I'm so proud of you, Steve, for doing this because it's just going to come back to you. And the mag, all of that is going to be around forever. Now, the movie, when I saw the movie, I didn't see it at the movie theater. I saw it on television. I have it recorded. I watched that thing. I can't tell you how many times. I probably know the dialogue. But what I want to know is, you know, Jason Statham, you know, the star in it. Did you have anything to do with choosing him?
Belle gave me a list that they were looking at. She said never to talk about it, and I said, I'm not going to give anybody the idea. But from the list, I said definitely Jason Statham, no doubt. Because he was far and above the rest, and he was, you know, he's a man of action, and he looks good doing the stuff he does.
Yes, he looks real, and he looks like he loves doing it. See, that's the thing. He's not faking it out there. He looks real. I mean, the movie's wonderful. Now, I haven't seen the second one. It's at the movie theater, so I don't know when I'll see that. You know, I oftentimes just end up waiting for it to come on to the television because that's what happens, but unfortunately. But if you see it on the big screen, I bet you it's really good. I bet it's really good.
It's really good, and but you have to see it on the big screen because it's not the same thing watching it on a little TV. You know,
no.
Treat yourself to a night of Meg.
I mean, you know, it came out on the 4th. The second one came out on the 4th. And that's why I didn't want to postpone our show, because I wanted it to be close to when the movie came out. Because if you wait too long, then it's kind of like it's on its way. You know what I'm saying? It's not at that thrill part, like right in the very, very beginning. I mean, you have no idea how honored I am when you wrote to me and said, I'll do this date, fine, good, here's my landline number. I mean, I almost fell off my chair.
I
want to thank you, really, because, you know, why would somebody bother with me? I'm a nobody. I'm a nobody out there. I'm not an agent. I'm not a this. I'm not a, you know, big, huge. You're probably my number 297th show. I've been doing them for 10 years. But that's not the point. I love what you do. I love what you're about. And when you said this, I told my son, I said, I can't believe it. He said, what do you mean you can't believe it? He said, Mom, you're really good on the air. You're really good at talking to people and pulling out stuff. I mean, I don't have anything written in front of me. I don't need it. I just talk to you. But I have to tell you, thank you again. If I don't thank you again and again, I mean, you just made my shows for me. Because nobody could believe that I have you on my show. My goodness. Tell me something, Steve. Why did you want to do it? Why?
Because it's your show, and it's your baby, and you need some help. And if I'm someone who can help you, then I'd be happy to help you. No problem. And by the way, dropping off, we never charge anything. I paid for everything, and one of my sponsors paid for everything.
Well, you help each other. No matter how, but you see, that's why you have success, because you don't base it upon, you know, how great I am on the waves, on the Blog Talk Radio or any radio podcast. You don't base it on that. You just decided, for some reason, and you didn't listen to my shows before, did you?
No, I have not had the opportunity.
So you see,
are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah. So the thing of it is that you decided to do it, and I'm ever so grateful, and I appreciate your help.
Stand by for 1 second, please.
What?
I'm not sure what happened here.
I can still hear you. Did we lose each other again? And I have to apologize to everybody. We lost him because where he is in Florida, and it's a little, you know, it's a little haywire today. I'm sitting here. It's after 2 where I am and where he is, and he'll call back in again. But isn't it wonderful that he chose to be on my show? Because he figured, well, she needs some help. Let's give her some help. And it really has given me help. I mean, what it does is it opens doors for me because, you know, he may say something to somebody, hey, go on Natalie's show. Go on it. You're going to, I mean, the time will go by so fast, she'll have you flying out of your seat because, you know, I mean, I knew all about him and I knew his movies, but this man has written so much, and we're talking, he's not listening, of course, because he hasn't called back in again, but there's so much about him, you know, and he has, you know, he has an illness, so here he is, he's back again, okay.
You want me back this time?
Yeah, you're back. I was just bragging about you, like I've known you for years.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm telling everybody, you know, he wanted to help me, even though I'm not I'm a nobody, really. I mean, I'm not a big producer. I'm not a big podcast.
You sound great on the radio. Why would you put yourself down like that? You only have to be radio.
Yeah, but you know what? You're opening a door for me, you know, Steve, is because somebody's going to look and say, oh, my God, she had Steve Altman on her show. This lady must be pretty good. I am good. I've had people tell me, I mean, I couldn't do something face-to-face like in a big – in front of people, I don't think, although one of these motivational guys said to me, oh, yes, you could. You start talking and you wouldn't shut up. But I love what I do. And I'm so grateful you wanted to help me just by being on my show. It's wonderful. Now, the trench, the second one now,
hold on,
Steve.
Hold on.
Okay.
Hold on. You got to let me talk.
Okay, talk.
So what I was going to say is that you're helping me. I mean, every interview helps me. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, you never know which interview is going to be the one that introduces somebody that you meet or sells more books for you. You don't even know. Because
no, it's
the fact that you're willing to help me, of course I'm going to help you.
Well, it's
okay.
Wonderful.
Now
I can talk.
Yeah.
No, I won't, except. You know, I try to get some – I don't even try to get anybody. I just let the publishers contact me. And I have a lot of them. If they'll say, well, do you want this one? And I'll say, yes, hook us up, yes. But what amazed me about you is whoever it was that contacted me, name is Jamie or whoever he was, you wrote to me. That was impressive. You wrote me back and answered yes. We'll do it. This is the date I want. And that, I have nothing, I can't keep praising you enough, Steve, because everything you get, you have earned. It's not been a free ride. It's not been an easy ride for you. Not at all. I mean, even from the very beginning of your life, you know, and you still have Parkinson's, I'm assuming, correct?
I've had it for 17 years. I was diagnosed when I was 47.
And that's got to be a rough road to walk. And you're just right at the top of the people that I know that are wonderful. You are.
You.
So I want to ask you, the second Meg, the trench.
Right.
What? Okay, now, I haven't seen it. So I don't want you to spill all the beans and tell me what it's about. But I want to know, I mean, was that easy to write after the first one?
That was, you know, part of that, you know, when I got hung up with Doubleday and the lawsuit and stuff, because I basically had enough money to last 4 months. And then it was going to be hardship because we just moved. And so, you know, the cars went back. This went back. Eventually, we sold our dream house. But I had to write something quick and sell it. Because Doubleday was plotting my demise. You know, they took out a – they did a one-page article with it in Time magazine that mentioned what happened. And, of course, telling their side of the story. And they said, you know, the book was not printable, was not readable. Well, you're right, it wasn't, because you damn well changed it in the middle of the book.
So, yep.
And they, you know, so I had to get back on the horse very quickly. And so, you know, I talked to my manager, said, you know, we got to do the sequel. I was going to do it years from now, but I got to do it now. And I got 4 months to write it. And that was the fastest I've ever written a book, and it's a damn good book. And it's one of the favorites of my fans, I think, because the level of writing went up a little bit. But the level of my writing went up from the trench to domain a lot, because I sort of, to prepare to write that domain story, I was reading other authors and, you know, the author who wrote Thomas Harris, who wrote Silence of the Lambs. When I read his book, that first chapter was written in present tense, and I had never read anything in present tense before. And the impact that it had on me was so great that that's the way I wrote the next four or five books, but starting with domain. So, you know.
You've written a lot. They're flashing in front of me, and I can't believe how all of this can come from one person, all of this material. I have a fairy tale in my head that I would really love to do. I mean, I record my voice with it because, I don't know how you do it, but everybody says, just sit down and write. No, I can't do that. I'm bouncing around. I'm, you know, like I'm working on my magazine right now. My mind is over there. I got all these people depending upon me to put them out into the magazine. And so it's very, very difficult. I almost have the name of it, but it would be, I mean, it's not in-depth. It's very light. It's just a beautiful love story. And maybe someday, you know, I'll be able to really write it. My granddaughter goes to SCAD. That's, you know, Savannah College of Art and Design. And she's in a good place for movies. She wants to do a production, I think. I don't know. She bounces around. But you know, Steve, she amazes me what she does. You know, she'll do slides for me and I'll have the voiceover. And all of you who are so creative just amaze me. I'm good at taking something and running with it. I cannot, like, I don't know. I've never done it. I don't know if I could create something. And, you know, like the girl who does a lot of my stuff for me, she'll say, well, what do you want? And I'll tell her, and she gets it done. And it's beautiful and it's perfect. I can't do that. But a lot of people are into graphics. They're into the written word. I love books. I've always read all my life. Always advanced reading for me. I used to read to her when she was in high school. She had to read a book. She'd say, Graham, read it to me. Because when I read it, it would have dialogue. You know, Steve, and I wouldn't say, oh, the girl went out the door. I'd say, well, you know, the girl went out the door. And when she got out the door, you know, I would read like that. I had enthusiasm and prose with it. I was just really, I really loved to do that. But I don't know. He amazed me how you put out all these books. I'm going to have to see the second movie now at the movie theater now. Maybe I can get my granddaughter to go with me. She loves this stuff, too.
Now,
but,
yeah,
you know,
I
think you recommended I go to the movies and see it, right?
I recommend it. But I apologize, but I've got another call coming in.
No, that's okay. And we really have gone over time, and I appreciate your time, and I will be connecting with you in email. I'd like to put something in my September issue that we had our chat, and I'll put a link to the show. Okay, but I'll email it to you. Okay, I'll email you what I need, okay? But thank you, thank you, thank you. I bow to you for coming on my show. You helped me a great deal. I mean, and I hope I helped you.
You did. Thank you.
You're a wonderful man. Okay, talk to you soon. Okay, bye-bye. Okay, everybody, you know, as I always end the show, and I'm going to end it this way, is that to believe in things you cannot see, they really are there. So far, it's okay here in South Carolina. I'm hearing things falling on my roof, but they're not trees, and they're just pine cones falling. So that's okay. I'm good with that. I'll pick up the pine cones. But I hope you enjoyed this. I'm going to get something from him, from Steve, to put into the magazine because what a great man. Anyways, have a great day. Look outside. It's a beautiful world. And next week, I don't think I have a show next week. Let me look at my little appointment book here. Let's go move to September in Adelaide. Don't be so silly. I do. I have somebody. Her name is Judy Wilkins Smith. Another great author, and I mean, I'm filled up. I'm filling up. Even my October is almost full. So, stay tuned. Watch for what's on. You know what comes through. And I want to publicly thank the two that helped me so much promoting Steve and his books and his movies, and that is my stars Amber Terrell and Judy, who's in Nairobi. Both of them just took all of this and ran with it all over the place. I mean, you'll see these ads everywhere, and it's quite impressive what they do. And it's brilliant, as one of them would say, as Amber would say to me, oh, it's brilliant. I just love that word. Anyways, have a good day, and remember, believe in things you cannot see. They really are there. And if you want to go see what Steve has done, go to Steve Alten, STEVEALTEN.com, and you'll see all the work that he's done. Thank you, everybody, and have a great day. Bye-bye.